Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dom Harvey podcast, brought to you by Radix Nutrition. Coming up, Karen Berger.
It doesn't matter how good you're doing. If you're on that high, the lows do come. So it's just being preparing yourself.
Yeah, Karen Berger, one of the stars of the Silver Ferns netball team. Just recently, she played her 50th test, which also happened to be a win against Australia. And this conversation is part of Karen's story. We talk about her journey from a small town in South Africa to her wildly successful netball career here in New Zealand. How she kept grinding for years despite the challenges, overcoming adversity, the importance of mental health in sports, her thoughts on age, and even her famously single status. This episode is packed with stories of determination and resilience that I reckon we can all learn from. Karen is a real breath of fresh air with a relentlessly positive attitude and outlook on life, so I hope you guys enjoy this one as much as I did. Just before we get into it, massive thanks to the team at Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. Their backing this year has given me the opportunity to grow the podcast in ways that would have been impossible otherwise. Their products are absolutely world-class. So many elite athletes are fans, but all of us can live a better quality of life by consuming Radix products. Don't take my word for it, though. Check them out for yourself. RadixNutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. RadixNutrition.co.nz. If you're going to go with their protein powder, I swear by the banana and the coconut flavours, but the whole range is exceptional, to be honest. Once you give their products a go, I will be very surprised if you don't go on to become a regular customer. All right, let's get into it. Karen Berger on the Dom Harvey podcast. Enjoy.
Oh, thanks for having me. What a lovely day.
It is 9:30 on a Monday morning. A little bit of behind the scenes here. So you and I have been going backwards and forwards. We set this up maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago. And I assumed that you were going to be in Auckland for netball, but I had no idea the significance of the game. So yesterday afternoon, it was New Zealand versus Australia, and you guys won. Congratulations. And it was a milestone game. It was your 50th game.
Yeah.
As a Silver Fern. And at the end, there was a presentation with a big bunch of flowers and massive highlights were playing on the video screen. And here you are the morning after.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's been a massive couple of months for us, actually. To be honest, a year. Heaps of netball. So it's just good to have finished on a high like that last night. Unfortunately, we didn't come away with the cup because of the goal differentials, but to be able to win the last couple of games against Aussie was amazing. And I wasn't aware of the milestone and that it was happening. So I pretty much found out when I arrived at the game.
How are you not aware?
Well, you know, like, we don't track how many games we play. Like, we get told, oh, great, you've played so many games. So I knew it was coming up at some point because of the filming that they'd done prior. So I just didn't know when it was going to happen. To be honest, I actually thought I missed it this year. And I think I was watching the men's game before ours, and one of the camera people came up to me and was like, oh, congratulations. I was like, on what? So yeah, that's pretty much when I found out. But it's good to not know, because that just adds a bit of extra pressure on you that you don't need, you know. Celebrations and surprise afterwards, quite nice.
Yeah, but it must be a nice time to, I don't know, maybe take a moment to pause and reflect on where you've come from. Because I mean, before I started researching for this chat, I thought I knew the Karen Berger story. I thought talented netballer, maybe got shoulder tapped to come to New Zealand and sort of develop here. But the actual story is quite different, and we'll get into this. But you moved here when you were 18. You weren't on anyone's radar when it came to, like, high-performance sport.
Yeah.
And you just, like, grind and grafted away for many years.
Yeah. I think people quite often ask me, like, why did you make like, what made you make the big move? And at that point, like, when you're 18, you just want to go do something. You want to have fun. Like, any adventure is a good adventure. So Mum mentioned that she had family here. I was actually here in Aussie. Dad had a best friend over there, or Mum had family here, which I hadn't met at that point. But I thought, yeah, why not? And I just came for a holiday for a gap year, and that it's turned into 12 years. And I think the netball was a good driving force for me to want to keep, to stay. But I also started building a life outside of that. And I think that's what helped with that grind. Took me up to 7 years before I actually pulled on that black dress. So, and again, people ask me how you lasted that long or how you kept grinding. But if you've got other stuff that you can focus on and also not have all your eggs in one basket, that's just a part of your life. I really started building a life for myself in New Zealand, and that's why I could have stayed and kept doing what I was doing.
Yeah, it's a good message, and we'll dig really deep into all that as we get through. First of all, I just want to go back to last night a little bit. So the day of a big game like that, New Zealand versus Australia, what does the day look like? So you get up in the morning.
Yeah, game day is pretty much Groundhog Day, to be honest. It was a bit of an earlier game, so we didn't have as much downtime as we usually do. But we get up in the morning, we go to our captain's run. It's mainly for our shooters to just go shoot. This last couple of series, we've started, because we've got a lot of young ones in our team, and we've started dancing.
So you're 30.
Oh, God.
What's a young one?
Oh, no, we've got like babies, like 19-year-olds, like 20, 21-year-olds. Like, they're really babies. We've started this dancing circle, and we just dance to start off with the captain's run. It just gets the vibe going, and that, just some fun. And then the shooters get to shoot. So finish off our captain's run, go back to the hotel, pretty much eat and rest and eat and rest and eat and rest until we have to strap and get ready for the game. So it's a pretty chill day. Pretty much Groundhog Day for game days.
Are you nervous the day of a game?
Yes and no. I don't think the nerves kick in for me personally until I'm actually out there on court, especially standing singing the anthem, or sometimes in the changing room. And it depends on the magnitude of the game as well. But once that whistle goes, it's gone, because then the adrenaline kicks in and you're good to go. So it's just managing that stress beforehand so it just doesn't override your performance.
Mm. So what happened in the series? So the first two games, Australia beat New Zealand quite convincingly by like sort of 10 points each game. Mm. And then the second two games, you guys turned it around completely. They were tight wins, but they were still wins.
Yeah, I think a home advantage counts quite a lot for the team, whoever in whoever's country it's played. And Australia had a massive crowd, like two massive stadiums. And also they're the reigning champs. I mean, well-deserved. They play amazing netball, but we also knew that we can do better. We're way better than what we've been putting out there. So it's just good to have seen in the last couple of games we started clicking, and then we had that eighth player, the crowd backing us as well. So we really just wanted to put some pride in that dress and play for the country, because we've had massive support, which is amazing. We're very grateful for, so we just want to put it out there for the fans as well.
Yeah, it must have been a strange feeling for Australia last night, because they just lost the game. The series was tied 2-2 and they won this trophy. And
yeah.
It must be really weird, like losing a game and then after giving it everything and then winning it must feel like a bit of a hollow victory in a way.
I know, it was an interesting vibe, because like even though we lost, we were quite excited and happy because we'd won the game, and obviously they'd lost their game, but they still won the cup. And I think the discussions are up there about whether we add a fifth game.
A decider. Makes sense.
Yeah. But I mean, like, they well deserved that win because their goal differentials were a lot higher, and we knew going in that was the nature of the cup. So we need to make sure next time if we do lose, we can't lose by heaps like that. But yeah, hopefully on the cards, we can add another game in there and make it a tight deciding game. That will just add to the time that we're away from home as well, and add to the load. But yeah, I guess we get to do this because we're fortunate enough to play in that black dress. So what's an extra game?
Yeah. And then what happens after the game? As I said, it's Monday morning. We're recording this at 9:30. You're looking amazing. It hasn't been an all-nighter, clearly.
No. Luckily, because it was an early game last night, quite a lot of
the girls jumped on early flights to go home. Like I've mentioned, it's been a massive month for us. And also this time, these mums and the team have been away from their kids for a while. So everybody just wanted to get home. So pretty much most of the team jumped on planes earlier to go home. A couple of us stayed behind for some other things. But yeah, usually after game, everybody's so tired. You just want to go home, have a really good feed and get into bed, because generally we've got late games, so we don't get to bed by like up till 11.
Wow. Well, I thought you'd be out for like a team dinner or some celebratory drinks or something. Is it not like that? Sometimes it's like that.
Sometimes, yeah. It depends on the vibe. I think we spend so much time together that having an extra dinner is not necessarily what everybody's wanting at that time. Everybody just wants to get back to their significant others and their families. So, yeah, I think we've seen enough of each other this year to not want to add to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of significant others, so you're sort of famously single. It feels like it's become like a... I don't know, like a footnote in the Kardenberger story, but I believe there might be someone simmering.
Oh gosh!
Now your teammate and friend Maya Wilson, I tapped into her for some she's been on the podcast previously, yeah. And I tapped into her for some info, and she said, "Well, I mean, I know the story that she told me, but obviously there's two sides to every." Oh, you look embarrassed. Obviously, there's two sides to every story, so I'm keen to hear your version of events. Keywords: Christchurch Quarry Lounge.
I guess, yeah, being 30 and single, I am a little bit picky. I think it's more with my time, more so than anything else, that unless I really feel like there's something or that I feel like I'm in the right place personally, quite often it's not to do with the other person but me as well, I don't want to drain my energy. And I'm a firm believer of the right person at the right time will happen, so I'll just wait for that to happen. But yeah, the team's always trying to play Cupid with me, which is really cute.
Is it cute or is it annoying? Annoying sometimes?
They've only got my best interest at heart, so I don't mind that. Yeah. And I guess I'm a big enough girl to be like, no, stop now. So, no, it's really cute. But, yeah, oh, gosh, the latest one. it's just we had a lady that it's a massive netball supporter, and she's beautiful. She still sends me messages. It's really cool. And I think she probably just asked in the team who's single because she's got a son that that's also single, so tried to play matchmaker there. Yeah. That's probably as far as I'll go at the moment, because that's as far as it's gotten.
Can I fill in some of the blanks according to Maya Wilson?
Oh, gosh, yeah, sure.
So apparently you guys are in the lounge sitting as a team, and this woman comes over and she's like, who's single? Who's single? My son's single. Which one of you guys is single? So it's like she just wanted a netballer, not necessarily zoning in on Kardenberger. And then... Yeah. And then she made you follow her son on Instagram, and he's a doctor or a radiologist.
Well,
or something?
We haven't followed each other, but
I heard there was a couple of DMs that have gone backwards.
Yeah, we've messaged, yeah, but again, like busy schedule, you know.
Yeah,
like you mentioned, he's a doctor, so he's busy as well. But yeah,
it's one of those stories. If it ends up, I mean, the chance is very slim that it's going to end up being your soulmate. But in the event that it is, it's a hell of a meet cute.
Look, to be honest, at this point, the people, how I meet people are quite interesting. I'm not overly social, and that's what my mum and my sister always tells me. You can't sit at home and expect to meet the right guy. So, and I'm also fussy about social media. I'm old school in that way. I like being approached either in person or just not on social media. But I know that's the way things go these days. So, it's more so about how they approach me on social media as well, which sometimes can throw me off or not. So
how do you mean? What throws you off?
I think it's how, like if you go directly into my looks or like that kind of stuff, I don't, yeah.
Oh, okay, if the first comment on a DM is something superficial, it's like.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all about how he talked to me in the first instance as well, whether I'll give you that attention or not. So
you seem incredibly self-assured. Like, where does this come from? I don't mean that in a negative way either. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. It can be a good and a bad thing sometimes.
I'm guessing a lot of people find it intimidating.
That's what I've heard. And I think that's probably also why I probably am single at this point. I've like heaps of my guy friends tell me that I come across quite intimidating, which is like I'm really not. but yeah, I think it's just part of it has got to do with having moved to New Zealand at 18 and having to, you know, just fight my own way and find my own way and being alone quite often. You just have to be comfortable with yourself and spending that time with yourself. I mean, raised by mum and dad in a way that we were able to go out and do that kind of thing and just want the most out of life and be self-assured in ourselves and know who we are and be happy with ourselves regardless of what the outside world says or does. So yeah, fortunate to have had that upbringing. I mean, the person I was when I first moved to New Zealand is completely different to who I am now.
Yeah, I've heard you refer to yourself as being sort of shy and introverted.
Yes, very.
12 years ago. But very. I mean, you go through a lot of growing up in your 20s, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, look, to be honest, I would still say I am shy. Yeah, it's a bit of a balanced thing for me. I would still say I'm shy at times, but definitely have grown up quite a lot since. When I first moved, I would not have spoken unless it was spoken to me. I would just like hide in the corners. I wouldn't want to do anything. Whereas now I try and put myself out there. I've realized over the last few years or like over the years that I've been in New Zealand, any opportunity is a great opportunity. So I have to put myself out there, even though it puts me in an uncomfortable position sometimes. So, and that's worked well for me. So yeah.
Well, that's plenty enough about your dating life. We can move on. But have you been in love before? Have you had a relationship, a long-term relationship before?
Yeah. I mean, when I was a lot younger, I think since being in New Zealand, I haven't had a long-term relationship.
Really? But you moved here when you were 18?
Yeah, I know. That's single for a very long time, yeah. Isn't it? no, I've like talked to people here and there, but never, like I mentioned, the time, and especially with netball being so busy, I just never had the time to really want to spend that on a significant other. I think I was really just focusing on myself. But yeah, back in the day, I had at high school, I had a partner boyfriend for what, 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And then before I moved to New Zealand, I had a long distance relationship for about a year or so and just ended up having to end that because he had a life in South Africa, I had a life in New Zealand. I just didn't see that working or going anywhere. So yeah, we ended that. And yeah, ever since it's just been me grinding away by myself. So, but the right person will come at the right time.
100%.
Yeah.
Something else Maya Wilson said is that she described you as a shopaholic and she said wherever she said, and she even said, pretty much every city you go to apart from Invercargill.
Yeah.
By the way, apologies, Invercargill.
Gosh. Because I am just me, I don't have kids to take care of, I don't have a partner or anything, so pretty much the money I have I can spend on myself. So I was like, I'm very big on budgeting though. Like I know I spend, but I make sure that I can spend the money that I do spend. So this time around, I took an extra little hand luggage. You would have seen me coming in this morning with my extra little roller case.
Yeah, there's a chicken suitcase and carry-on. Yeah. Yeah, what did you buy?
Yeah, so the carry-on was empty when I left. What did I buy? I bought the shoes I'm wearing. I bought some boots. I bought a dress. I'm going to the races in November in Christchurch. I bought a summer dress. Gosh, I bought some face products. Yeah, anything and everything, really.
Right. Yeah. God, you must be exhausted by the time the game plays.
Oh, gosh.
Where's Karen? Oh, she's been shopping all day.
That's my therapy, though. Like, even though I don't buy anything, it's just nice to get out of the house and just get amongst people and in the shops and things. It's just my retail therapy.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Right, so let's go all the way back, back into the early days of Karen Berger. So tell me about South Africa. Where are you from? You're from like a small country town?
Yeah, I usually just say Cape Town, but
it's a few hours away though.
Yeah, about a 3-hour drive, but it's like 3-hour drive up the West Coast. Quite a small town. Went to an even smaller town from that town in primary school because mum was my first grade teacher. She's a teacher for the first grades there. primary school in a very small town, slightly bigger town for high school. But all my sports and everything was pretty much in Cape Town every weekend. So spent a lot of time in that area. So I'm quite familiar with that area as well.
I've never been to South Africa, but one of the first things that gets sort of brought up is just how violent and unsafe the place is in terms of carjackings and stuff. Is that your experience?
I think,
does it get a bad rap?
Yeah. I think growing up there, it's just you know what to do and what not to do. And I think if you stick to those rules, you're quite all right. Sometimes you can be a bit unlucky at times. But since living in New Zealand, I have realised how bad it can get and how amazing it can be. And going back home, I definitely notice it's ramped up in the last few years as well. When I speak to my family again, I realise how South Africans that live there are just so used to it that they don't necessarily know how bad it can be. It's an amazing place. I love going there on holiday. Again, if you go with the right people and you know what to do and what not to do, it's all right. It's all good. But it's definitely a sense of having to look over your shoulder quite often.
Yeah, although, like, in saying that, just while you were giving that answer, I mean, you know, New Zealand, we're not entirely safe anymore anyway, are we? There's, you know, ram raids all the time and we've got our own issues.
I think every country has their positives and negatives. And like my sister, I know she loves the country itself. It's beautiful. And the people, like she's especially saying with the Rugby World Cup at the moment, it's amazing how rugby can bring everybody together and how supportive everyone is at the moment and the vibes in South Africa at the moment over there. So it definitely has its positives, don't get me wrong. So it's not the worst country.
Yeah. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh, by the time this podcast comes out, it's going to be old news. But yeah, the Rugby World Cup final is next weekend. It's New Zealand, South Africa. One country you were born in and spent 18 years, one country that you've represented in sport for the last 5 years and spent 12 years in. Who are you? Who do you root for?
Yeah, I've heard this quite often over the last couple of weeks. People keep asking me that too. I think values-wise and morals-wise, I can't justify not supporting the All Blacks. I live in a country. I play for the country. I represent the country. I benefit from the country. So for that reason, I would support the All Blacks, but obviously have that little piece of heart with South Africa. So I won't be gutted if they do win. Yeah.
What are you like in South Africa as a young girl? You were a high jumper, eh?
I was, yeah. Well, small town, so there wasn't many options to do in terms of sport, but I tried to do as much as I possibly can. My two main ones were in the winter netball, and in the summer was high jump. But I'd played tennis. I did a bit of gymnastics. If there was any dance classes, I would go do that. And I think when I was about 14, I tore my cartilage in my knee and I had to have an operation. And at that point, mum was like, right, I know you love doing all this stuff, but I think we're overdoing it a little bit with your body. You need to pick and choose what you want to do. So at that point, I was like, right, okay, in the winter I'll do netball and in the summer I'll do high jump. And I loved high jump. It was so good, but it's a very individual sport. Anybody in athletics will probably be able to tell you that. It's a good community, don't get me wrong, but you, when you're competing, it's pretty much you, just you. So I sort of leaned a little bit more towards the netball.
The team sport. How did you mess up your knee at the age of 14? Like a cartilage tear. That sounds like an older person's injury, doesn't
it? Yeah, I know. Well, apparently, according to the doctor, because of the high jump, the constant like landing and twisting on the leg, and then the netball's that constant like jarring on the knees. And I guess at that age, you don't really do much rehab kind of stuff. So, which when you get older, you sort of regret a little bit. But yeah, I think just overdoing it a little bit too much on everything and not managing myself well enough at that age. But yeah, they're holding up so far.
Yeah. Oh, listen, you played your 50th game for New Zealand last night. The old knees are doing just fine. Oh. So did they operate at the time? Did they like scrape you out, clean you out?
Yeah. Well, funny enough, because at that age, they were like, you're quite young. We don't want to take any of it out. Yeah. So they tried to just stitch it up and see if they can. Obviously, there's not much blood flow to that area, so it was going to be a risk whether it was going to work or not, but it ended up working. But over the years, the last few years especially, they've got, you know, damage to them again. I've got a few tears here or there, but not significant enough for me to have to do anything about it. So it's just managing them, really.
Yeah, because I was knowing that you were coming around today, I watched the game yesterday afternoon under a different sort of lens, I guess, and in particular, like focusing on you. And yeah, there's a lot of jumping around, isn't there? I was thinking about your knees. It's remarkable that you've had and continue to have the career that you have, given this knee issue at the age of 14. That could have spelt the end of any sort of like dreams or hope, really, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well, at that time when it did happen, the doctor did say, "Look, as little as much sport, like if at all, going forward." And I was like, "Well, that's not happening." I was determined to be like, no, that's definitely not me. So I guess you just get back on the grind. You just have to listen to your body. Sometimes you can do things, sometimes you can't. And I think that's where physios and doctors come in quite well. They know what every individual is capable of doing and what they can't do. Unfortunately, the way I play is quite hard on my knees and my ankles. But I'm going to do it for as long as I can, as much as I can, until the body gives in. And then I'll go and enjoy the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I think, one thing that the well-meaning medical experts can't necessarily take into account is probably someone's like will or determination. So they can say, oh, you probably shouldn't do sport, but it's like they don't know you as a person or what your mindset is.
The mind is an amazing thing. And it's helped me at times, or the worst of times, in times when you think you literally can't do it anymore, it's really pulled me through. So I think that's the aspect of sport where you really have to hone in at times. And it doesn't matter how good you're doing. If you're on that high, the lows do come. So it's just being preparing yourself, because it's a roller coaster. It really is. And to dig yourself out of that and stay on that high is it's a tough one. It's quite hard.
Yeah, we will get into all that stuff, because there definitely has been some adversity in the Karen Berger story, hasn't there? one thing that springs to mind, I guess, is the Commonwealth Games last year, where you had like an ankle injury. That must have been devastating. We'll get into that. But yeah, so you're growing up in South Africa, you're good at netball? Yeah, you're great at netball?
Yeah, I mean, I made it into the rep teams, yes. I was being selected in those teams, so I was all right. I was good. It's quite hard sometimes. I don't like talking too much about my performances, but yeah, the year before I decided to move over, I just played the under-21s, the Protea squad had just had their trials. I think it was in December. And I got selected in the group to go into the final trials. But at that point, I was like, right, do I stick it out here or do I go for this opportunity in New Zealand? Not much offering for me in New Zealand.
Would it have been easier for you to stay in your home country and make your national team there?
It's tough. I really take my hat off to the players that do play for South Africa, because up until recently it was not a paid position. And I know people that played in the South Africa, or know of people that were studying for years and years and years, because they just weren't flexible. The unis aren't as flexible to be able to allow you to go do that. You can't maintain a job necessarily if you want to go do that. So it's just, the grind is a lot harder. I really take my hat off to those people. And I think personally, for the my with my personality and the person that I am, I probably wouldn't have kept playing if I stayed in South Africa. I would have wanted to make a living. I would have wanted to be able to support my family. I would have wanted to have a successful life. And it just sounds like it's really hard. Most of those starting lineup players for the Proteas play overseas. They go and play domestically in another country. And then it's two lives you're asking them to have, one life in one country for half of the year, and then you're having to go back to your home country. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
So is netball more professional here than what it is in South Africa?
Definitely, 100%.
Do you guys get paid okay? Do you get paid a match fee or a salary? How does it work?
Yeah, look, there's always going to be the drive to want to be paid more, but coming from a country that don't get paid at all, I know how amazing it is. And even from when I started to where we are now, there's been increases. So I'm not complaining, obviously striving for more, but I'm quite happy. It's easier when you are playing for both domestic and international. You can make a living out of it. It's a bit harder when you don't have that international salary and you're having to find a job that only does half the year, because the first half of the year you're pretty much in your domestic season. So you're away from work quite a lot, so it's a little bit harder.
So do some of the girls have jobs?
I don't think anybody in the Ferns at the moment have any jobs. Maybe some contract work here or there just to tick them over, but domestically, yes, there's a lot of girls, and that's also how the schedule for the domestic teams have to adjust to allow those players to have a job. Because as great as it is to be playing and being paid for netball, they still need to have a life outside of netball and they still need that job. So we need to accommodate them as well.
So when does the seed get planted about you moving to New Zealand? I heard it was like a secret from your dad.
Yeah.
You bounced the idea off your mum and...
It happened really quickly. Look, I was in my last year of school. And around like June, July, I think my uncle and aunt who live here, it's mum's cousin. They went to visit. They've been living in New Zealand for more than 20 years now. And we were in Cape Town one day and mum was like, right, well, my cousin's over from New Zealand. They're at the airport at the moment. They're literally just about to go back to New Zealand. Let's just go say hi. So we went to the airport, had a chat as mums do. You know, they boast about their kids and they mention that I play netball. And my uncle was like, oh, well, why don't you send her over? Let her come stay with us for a year. I thought this was a joke. Like, we just went about life for the next month or what. Started applying for universities for the following year. Applied for some scholarships because I would have needed a scholarship. Didn't hear anything from the unis. You can, in South Africa, it can literally wait to the last minute before you hear anything. So by like October, I wasn't sure what was happening the following year. And then my uncle messaged mum. He was like, no, but we're serious. Like, are you sending her over? And at that point, we're like, right, well, we've got nothing to lose. Dad is a little bit harder to convince sometimes with these big decisions in life.
Why? Because he's protective? Or were you a daddy's girl? Or?
Yeah. Well, he loves security and not necessarily taking too many risks. That's where mum's a good balance for him, because mum quite like taking those risks. And so we knew it was going to take a while to get dad across that line. But this is the funny thing with dad. We're always like, it starts out with he would argue against it. Like, we'll say something and he'll completely argue against it. But the more you talk about it, eventually he just listens.
Right.
He won't argue anymore. He'll just listen. And then he gets to the point where he starts agreeing and he starts talking with. So I think we fast-tracked that process a little bit. So we did all of that stuff in the background, did all the visas and everything that needed to be done. And we started talking about it. Not that I was going, but there's a possibility that, you know, it might be quite nice. And I don't think we told him till about like a month before I left, like, no, this is actually happening now. And for that first 2 or 3 years, whenever mum would miss me or I'd be homesick or anything, he would just be like, no, you wanted to send her there. You guys decided to do this, so don't sulk and cry about it now. So, but I mean, he's one of my biggest supporters now. Like, he wouldn't want it any other way. So he's proud of me. He supported me, don't get me wrong. He was a bit in two minds about the whole thing, but he supported me regardless. And now that, you know, there's some success story behind it, I guess he's pretty proud.
Yeah, I mean, well, you look back and everything's worked out fine and it's working out fine. But, yeah, as I alluded to before, tough fucking grind. So you come here. You didn't have like laser point focus on the Silver Ferns, eh? You were just here to have a good time and...
Yeah, look, to be honest, everybody's got a dream. It was never a goal. It was a dream. And with a dream, you don't necessarily think that it is possible. So I was like, it would be amazing to play for the Silver Ferns, but I never made it a goal. I've tried changing my mind my way of thinking over the years where I don't like to put too much attention on something that, because if it doesn't work, I don't like that disappointment feeling. But I've had to change that, because to reach those high things, you have to put a lot of time and effort into it. So at that point, I was like, oh, I'm just here. I'm just trying to enjoy my life. I joined a local club who to this day, like a family to me. They're massive supporters, love them all. So pretty much joined the local club and I just played. They gave me opportunities. They sent me to rep stuff. Like my raw skills coming over, I was not the best netballer. I had so much to learn. Like my club coach benched me at times. I got put into second teams and I didn't make it into rep teams for years. You know, it wasn't easy, but I decided to build a life for myself outside and have other things to focus on. I had studies outside of netball. I tried to work wherever I could. I had to work to support myself. Yeah, it was a really tough grind, but along the journey, I met the most amazing people that I still talk to this day that have meant a lot to me and have helped me throughout that process. So it's been a fun journey.
Mm. Yeah. So what did those first couple of years look like? Because I'm imagining if I was in your position, you're on the other side of the world, you're so far away from home. Every time there's some sort of hurdle or obstacle or adversity, you must feel so homesick.
Yeah.
What were you doing in those early years? So you found a job?
Yes. Well, my first year I was here on a visitor's visa and you're not allowed to work or do anything or study or anything. So I pretty much just enjoyed that year. Just tried to, you know, see what New Zealand's like and just experience it. And then I had a serious sit down with mum over Skype at the end of that year. And she's like, right, what's happening over there? Are you enjoying it? What's happening? I was like, mum, I'm really enjoying it. But at that moment in time, I knew what it was going to cost for me to stay in New Zealand. And I'm like, we're not the wealthiest of families, like, you know, just an average Joe family. So I knew that if I wanted to stay, I would have had to go study. And international study cost is astronomical, especially in our eyes at that time. So I was like, Mum, I really love it here, but I'm not going to put that on you because I know it costs a lot. And she's like, we're going to make this work. Obviously, they had to go get some money somewhere, put themselves in debt a little bit. And that's why to this day, I'm not doing what I do just for myself. I do it for my family as well, because they offered up so much for me to be here and do what I do. So at that point, I was like, great, I can go study. Mum was like, we're going to make this work. So my first year of studies, I joined the Institute of Sports and I was like, I need to work extremely hard because I need a scholarship the next year. I can't let my mum and dad have to put up any more money for me. So I worked my butt off to try and get the best grades. I think I got distinction that year. And I had to work as much as I possibly could because I didn't want to ask them for any more money because they already spent too much money on me. So I had to work for the money I had. I mean, I was working at Macca's on Sundays just to afford my train tickets for the week, going in and out of the hut in Wellington. So, but it's character building. I mean, I wouldn't take that back for anything. I learned a lot about myself and what it costs to be where I am. And then I guess after the studies, it just turned into work placements. I built the right connections. The place where I studied offered me a job. So, it was a tough first 5 years in New Zealand.
Oh, that's such a great story. Talk about, I don't know, added stress or added motivation to make it work. Like when you've got your parents with skin in the game like that, what do? They mortgage the house, get a bank loan? What are they?
They put more money on their home loan. They put more money on the mortgage. And I think Dad, I think he approached one of his mates or something, who's a massive supporter of me too. And so, I mean, still paying those off.
Really?
Yeah, it was a big amount. And that's why whenever I can, however I can, I support whichever way possible. They don't like asking for help ever, but that's a great thing. I think I was talking to my mum this morning as well. Our family are quite tight-knit and we're happy to help wherever we can. We never ask, but we always offer. And I'm quite fortunate to be in that situation. I know there's a lot of people that don't have those kind of family situations. So, yeah, I love them to bits.
Wow, that's really, really cool. But also so much pressure at that young age. Do you look back now from the lens of a 30-year-old woman and think, so I'm guessing then you were 19, 20. Like if you had your time again, you'd probably be like, don't borrow the money.
Oh my gosh. That's why it's so amazing that those kind of decisions only happen once. Mm. And again, it goes back to me, the way things are supposed to happen, it will happen. As long as I put my best effort forward and I do the best I can, whatever needs to happen will happen. So if I know I've given it my all and it doesn't happen, it wasn't supposed to. And if whatever happens, there's always doors that open and closes. So I love opportunities. I grab them all whenever they come my way, whether they're good or bad, or whether they work out or not. I meet people along the way that then puts me in other directions. So that was an opportunity that I grabbed that my family helped me with. And it was amazing. This World Cup was in South Africa in July, August. And this was the first time since leaving home where I had my whole family that was supporting me on the sidelines. And they were so vocal. I think they probably enjoyed the whole process or the whole thing more than I did. And I think that was important for me to show them my Thanksgiving and give back to them as much as I possibly could. And whenever they talk about coming to visit to New Zealand, I'm like stoked because they've only ever been here once, all of them. Always trying to convince them to move over, but I know it's a big move for them. They got the whole family. So, that's a dream of mine to have them all here, but we'll see how that goes.
They're probably like, Karen, we can't afford it. We gave you that money.
Yeah, I know, right? So I was like, I need to find ways. I need to make a success. I need to find ways to help them, support them, because I know a lot of them are keen. My brother, he's very keen to move over. But again, it's almost like a package deal. I'm quite fortunate, and sometimes I do feel a little bit guilty being here because I'm the one that left and I'm the one that gets to benefit and enjoy the life that I have now. And as much as they all want to move, they're all like, but we don't want to go without each other. At times I do feel a little bit guilty for being here by myself, but like my uncle who also made that big move themselves, like someone needs to make that move to open the doors for others. So
why do you explain that or elaborate on that a bit? Why do you feel guilty?
I think it is because, I mean, they put so much time and effort and money into me being here and I get to enjoy it. And I know if they could, they'd move tomorrow. but obviously there's like the age with mum and dad's age come into play. Money side definitely is massive come into play. And they've got families now. Like I moved at a time where it was just me and they supported me to do that. Whereas they've all got families to support. So it's a big decision. It's so much harder for them to be able to make that move. And it's just that constant support from them to be able to allow me to do this. I'm quite grateful that I get to be in this position. And even though they want to, they're not necessarily in a position to. So I'll try my best to do the most I can to help support them to do that now.
Yeah. And also, you say you're the one that gets to enjoy it, but fuck, it wasn't an easy road. Like it was, you were here 7 years before you made the Silver Ferns. Like were there times where you thought about like tapping out and going back or not?
Yeah,
not really.
I think the first 3 or 4 years, because we're such a tight-knit family, and whenever anything happens, I'm immediately on the phone to mum or my sister to talk through that, through it with them. And because we're such a tight-knit family, I really miss that element of it. And so whenever I missed home or just needed somebody around me or things just weren't going my way or things were just too hard, I did consider, I was like, is this where I pull the plug? Is this where I go home? But then I just reminded myself, no, they've put the time and effort into me being here. This isn't going to be forever. I was determined to do something with my life here. And so I just sucked it up and just kept going with the support, obviously, from them. And I think it wasn't till I started playing ANZ level and I started seeing the results that I was like, okay, no, I think I can do this now.
You just get enough of a taste of success to know that you're on the right track, sort of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you have a plan B? Like you said you were studying before. What were you what were you studying for?
Well, at that point, I just studied towards a sports science degree. But it was pretty much just something to tick me over and keep the brain ticking over. And it was something that I was interested in at that time. But I'm going to go back into studies next year. I've discovered a new interest in nutrition, which I really love. And I think that's the tough thing about being a netballer is having something else after netball and preparing yourself for it as well.
Because the end is going to come. It's inevitable.
Exactly.
And it's either going to come, if you're very lucky, it's going to come on your own terms. Otherwise, you're going to be dumped or you're going to be injured.
Exactly. So that's why there's this constant thing in the back of my mind. I need to work on that kind of stuff as well. And so, but I also want to do something that I enjoy and that I would want to do. I don't want to just have to get up every morning and go do a job because I have to. I want to do it because I love it and I want to. And so it took me a while to find something that I'm actually interested in doing. And it wasn't until my injury last year that I got some downtime and I got to reflect a little bit on things and change a few things in how I do, like with things about my own nutrition. And that's where that spark and started interesting me about what nutrition and how the food supplements the body and what it does. And so that's where I was like, I think this is something I can do. So yeah, I'm going back into studies next year, 30-year-old going back into studies, trying to do it part-time, mixing it with netball as well. So
God, I don't know how you fit everything in.
Look, because of the grind that I did my first few years, I pretty much got up in the mornings, 5 a.m., to go to the gym, to make it to school on time. And then at lunchtimes, I might do some personal training sessions, go back to school. After school, I always had work, trainings in the evening. So my days were very long back when I used to do the grind. So nothing is too much for me anymore. Actually, I feel guilty sometimes when I'm sitting at home not doing anything on a day off. I'm like, why am I just sitting doing nothing? I could be doing something right now. But I also want to try and get myself into the mentality of I need to enjoy this while I have it as well. So yeah, it's easier now because of what I've been through.
Wow, that's really inspiring. I mean, the fact that you came here and you worked so hard to get to where you are today, it's really cool. Like, there must have been so many points along the way where you thought about giving up or you wondered if you're on the right track. Yeah. And so much pressure on your shoulders as well.
Mm. Support system, honestly. I wouldn't have been able to do it without the support system. The right people to encourage you at times, or the right people to tell you when you're being too much or when you're not doing too much, especially now and throughout my netball career as well. When you're just feeling a little bit down on yourself, you just need that support system to be like, no, you can do this. Or sometimes when you're at the top, you're like, don't get too cocky, you know, you've got to, you know, take the situation, enjoy it while you can, but there's lows coming as well. So your support system is massive.
Yeah, so you made your Silver Ferns debut September 2018. You get sent off. What happened there? I tried to find the clip online. I couldn't find it anywhere, which is probably lucky for you.
Right.
This could have been the beginning and the end of your...
Honestly, I felt this was the end. I was like, this is me. I'm done. adrenaline pumping, an experience, playing against a very experienced player. I didn't feel like the send-off was necessarily bad enough or the what they sent me off for was bad enough, but I knew the situation that got me to that point. Prior to the game starting, the umpires did tell us that if you're on a warning, you have to be extremely careful. And so, yes, the warning was warranted. I probably went for a ball I shouldn't have gone for. wasn't playing rugby, I was playing netball. And so I was on the warning, and that's where the discipline comes in, the experience come in, and I just ran, jumped a pass, and Joe Harton stepped into me to pass the ball, and obviously I landed on her. So that cost me my send-off, and it was the fastest and the slowest 2 minutes of my life. I had to go sit on the bench for 2 minutes and watch the rest of my team try and fight it out there with six players on court. I was playing with Casey Kopua at the time in the circle. We had a laugh about it afterwards, a few months, not immediately. That I left her alone in the circle. But amazing coach, Nolene, put me back out there after my 2 minutes. She didn't replace me. She made me go back on there and fix my own mistake. There was only like 3 minutes to go in the game anyway. But yeah, I had to tail between the legs, go back out on court.
When you're sent off and you're sitting on that sideline, bear in mind the significance of the game, you know, being your debut for the Silver Ferns. How do you hold the emotions on? How do you not burst into tears?
Adrenaline, yeah. I think, was keeping me going. I think I went back to the hotel. The first thing I did was Google whether anybody else had been sent off, because at that point, red cards and send-offs weren't like necessarily such a big thing. Like recently we've had a few more of those happening, but at that point it wasn't really a thing. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Timopata George or Bailey at that point had been sent off in a World Cup game. And I was like, okay. I'm not the only one. but I was still stressing out. And I didn't get any communication from the coaches. I was like, oh no, this is me. This is my career over. Had the worst sleep ever that night. But we had our one-on-ones the next morning and I got called in. Amazing coach that Nolene is. She sat me down and she's like, just trying to understand what my thinking was around why I did what I did and how it happened, talked it through, and she's like, great, well, now you've learned, don't do that again. And the next tour, I got game time, I got starting lineup. So yeah, just testament to the coach that she is, that she's very big on players learning from their mistakes. If you learn from your mistakes, I think she's happy. It's when you don't learn, that's when you're in trouble.
Yeah, in reflection, I suppose that would have been really mean just to throw you out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
You know, on your first debut. So it's good that they gave you another shot.
Thank goodness.
But so no one says anything after the game. So it's like silence till the next day.
It's that awkwardness because you know you did wrong, you know. And so they don't want to justify it by being like, no, that was like unlucky for you because you did wrong. You have to acknowledge that. But I did have the support from the players that like, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. Like, don't worry about it. So, it's torn between two because you need to acknowledge that you made a mistake because that's how you learn from it. But getting that love from the players was very much, thank goodness.
Yeah. I mean, you can look back and laugh about it now with 50 tests under your belt.
I don't hide from it. Yeah. I think at the start I was like, oh, I just don't want anybody to mention it. But it's like you say, you learn from your mistakes and it's so important to learn from them. So I quite often mention it. A lot of people don't even know about it and I would bring it up. I was like, well, I have been sent off and this is what I learned from it. So
is your recollections of your test debut for New Zealand all bad because of that? Or
No. To be honest, I can't really remember too much about my first few games anyway. So my key things I remember are my first starting lineup game and my first time playing against South Africa. That's my key memories from my early days on. So I don't think I really remember much about anything else. And then in terms of the World Cup, there was an amazing experience. I wasn't necessarily on in the very last game, but my personally for me was at that point, I hadn't had my family on the sidelines since I left New Zealand, for New Zealand. So I heard my mum, I think it was one game, I think we were playing like against Botswana or something. But I will always remember that game because I grew up with my family on the sidelines. Wherever anybody had anything, I was like, we've got this motto in our family, one for all and all for one. So wherever one went, the other went. So whenever I had sports tours, they were on the sideline. I could always hear them. And in this specific game, I think I went up for an intercept or something, and I could vividly hear my mum's voice in the crowd. And that's something I would, that was my highlight of that World Cup, because that's something that will stick with me, and the fact that she made the effort to come and watch me and to be there to support me was, yeah, amazing.
Is that the 2019 World Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah, where Silver Ferns won.
Yes. Yeah, that was an amazing campaign. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have been in a team with amazing players, legends of the game, Laura Langman, Maria Folau, and Casey Kopua, who are amazing players. And the campaign, it was a grueling campaign leading into that World Cup. What we went through physically and mentally prepared us for that final. And yeah, I think we still, to this day, there was a December camp that we... We absolutely got smashed, and anything we go into ever since then was like, is it going to be like that camp? We compare everything to that camp. So, but loved it and hate it at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. What are the other like standout moments or highlights in your career, do you think?
Obviously, my first game against South Africa, especially having a starting lineup in that game as well. I often got asked, what it is like playing against my home country. I didn't know any of the players personally that were in the team, so I didn't have that personal connection with them, and I never played in that team myself, so I didn't have that connection with them. The only connection I really have is the fact that they are from my home country, and that I could sometimes understand what they were saying on court when yeah, they were talking to each other.
It's got to be so weird though with hearing the anthem though.
Like, that's probably
you got two anthems pre-game that bring you goosebumps.
Yeah, I think that's probably the weirdest thing for me, is standing in the black dress facing the opposition and trying to not sing along to the South African anthem. And I didn't really, like, and this is the thing, that I grew up not knowing how amazing our anthem really was until I moved here. And everyone, so many New Zealanders tell me about how they love the South African anthem and how beautiful it is. And it's not till you hear that kind of thing, I was like, actually, yes, it is really beautiful. Yeah, new appreciation for it, but really hard trying to not sing along to it. Yeah. I mean, I sing along to it in my head, but...
Well, I suppose it's that saying, like, absence makes the heart grow fonder, eh? So the longer you are away from your birthplace, the more of a connection you feel to it, perhaps, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just amazing that the support recently as well, and going back and playing the World Cup this year in South Africa as well, the amount of support I get from the family and friends over there. I do feel like I can do more in terms of my connection with back home, because I left at such an early age. Not very many people know how long I actually lived in South Africa. And so I don't necessarily have that strong of a connection with when I do go back there. Sometimes people are quite surprised. I was like, oh my gosh, you're South African? I was like, yeah, yes, I am. And I spent quite a decent time there too. So I don't want to lose that side of me.
Yeah, because your accent's not that strong, is it?
I know. So this is the funny thing. Like, when I go home, I don't like speaking English because obviously, like, oh, why?
What do you speak? Is it Afrikaans?
Afrikaans, right. Yeah. Home language is Afrikaans. And so growing up, obviously, second language is a mandatory thing in New Zealand and South Africa, especially English, because we've got so many different languages. We've got like 13 different languages. So you have to have a common one to actually understand each other. So at school, you've got your main language, which to me was Afrikaans, but we have to learn English from a like young age. So I could speak it, I can understand it fluently, all good, but I never used it because I grew up in a really small town. It's pretty much just Afrikaans, only spoke Afrikaans. So my first real like chucking in the deep end was in New Zealand, where I had to speak it on a daily basis. Like, that's probably also why the combination of being shy and that language barrier, I wouldn't really approach people or talk to people because I was translating in my head before I spoke. Whereas now, whether I'm Afrikaans in the Afrikaans or English environment, I think in the language that I'm speaking. But back then, I was thinking in Afrikaans and I was like, right, I need to translate. And so it took me a bit longer to reply to or respond to people.
Like a buffering computer.
Yeah, yeah. and quite often use the wrong words or tenses or stuff. But yeah, so pretty much just thrown in the deep end to have to speak it on a daily basis. And I think that's where I picked it up because my first time using it that much was here. Yeah.
Well, I'm an idiot that can only speak one language and that's English. So explain that to me. So you're thinking in your head in Afrikaans and then you're trying to translate it before you say it out loud?
Yeah. Like, I would think about what I want to say before I say it. Like, so I would hear it and I was like, right, this is what I want to say. And then I would translate it. I was like, okay, now I need to say it.
Oh my God. It's going to take such a long time to order a coffee or something.
Yeah, but that was back then. And right. And that's why, like, fully immersing yourself in that culture is the best way to do it. Because now when I go home, predominantly I speak Afrikaans. And yes, okay, it takes me a couple of days to not get stuck on words. But the moment I'm in an Afrikaans environment, it just flows and I just think Afrikaans, speak Afrikaans. And then I come home to New Zealand. Well, I've got so many hoes. And then I come home to New Zealand. And then I was like, right, couple of days to just get the brain regathered and then think English, speak English.
Yeah. So when you play South Africa and you can hear them speaking Afrikaans, what sort of things are they saying?
Oh, just like stuff about if something's not working, what they're going to do to fix it.
Right.
Or maybe on the centre pass, they're going to say what they're going to do and I'll be like, right, guys, we need to do this because they're doing this. So
it's amazing intel, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's like you have to relay that message quite quickly to the other people. So
no time to do the translate.
No. So quite often it's not really useful to know because it's not like you can relay to the rest of the team in that quick few seconds. But, yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. And when you play poorly, how quickly do you bounce back? Or when something goes wrong, like we touched upon before, the test debut with the send-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, what for you makes a good game and a bad game?
Well,
last night, for example, your 50th test match where you won against Australia, was that a good game?
I would base it off at team effort, but also an individual effort and how I helped my team. I used to rate myself on how much ball I got, how many intercepts I got. But when you start playing international level, it's so hard getting ball. And so if you get stuck on just, that's the way I rate myself, I can get down on myself quite harshly. And I was like, no, I still do a good job. I still need to tell myself I'm doing a good job. So like last night, we didn't get heaps of ball, but we got ball. And I think to me, it's about what I did for my unit and how I contributed to my unit. Obviously, the best thing to know that you did all right was the fact that you stayed on court in the first instance.
Yes, I didn't get sent off again.
But yeah, I think it's just how I helped my unit. And the Kiwi style is very much to be playing together and for each other. So how I helped my unit to get born, that's in your style. Like, again, amazing coach who knows what your strength is. And you would have seen in the last couple of games, she made strategic changes to make a difference because she knows what every single player offers and what their strengths are. And so that's all she ever asks of you to do is just bring your best. And so that's what I know. I know what my strengths are. They constantly ask us, what's your strength? How do we get the best out of you? And so I know what I need to go do. And as long as I do that well, then I'm happy. Mm. Yeah.
And do you have like a post-analysis or anything with Dame Nolene? And when does that take place? So you've just finished the 4-game series.
Well, not necessarily after the 4 games. Usually we have a series debrief. Yes, like we had one after the English series, especially going into another series. We had to do that. What's the goods, the bads, what we need to work on, all that kind of stuff. And then we took it into the next series. So because we don't have anything else on for the rest of the year, it's not necessarily such a big focus for us. We've only got one coming up next January, but I'm sure there will be things that, because we also finished on a high and things were going quite well, there's obviously a lot of bit less to have to worry about and focus on. But yeah, no, we do have a team debrief after the series to know what we did well, what we need to keep doing, and what we need to change to be better.
Yeah, you and Dame Nolene must have a special relationship because she's been your coach through your entire time at the Silver Ferns.
Five years. She's it's like I've been under her for so long and still like, who was that? I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, another experienced player, but we were saying it's still, I wouldn't say intimidating, but the aura and the person that she is, it's out of respect that you still fear her. and it's a good way.
A good fear.
Yes. We absolutely have so much respect for her. And like, and again, the kind of coach that she is, if you play hard and you play well, you will get your opportunities. You get feedback, you get told what you do well and what you need to work on. So you're always clear on what you need to fix or what she wants you to do. And that clarity means a lot for us as players. So I want to say I've got a really good relationship with her, but so much respect for her and the coach that she is. I mean, she's done amazing things that it's that still that respect and fear kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting relationship and an interesting relationship from her perspective to the players as well. Like when you've got someone like you who she's worked with and selected since you were 25 and you're 30 now, I mean, if she's around long enough, there's going to, you know, eventually maybe become a time where she's going to make a hard decision about you.
100%. And but that's the great environment that we have in our team as well. We've got so many young ones coming through. And the coach at Cheers, if you do the job and you do it really well, you'll be out there and you'll be selected. And for us as older players or more experienced players, rephrase that.
Yeah, by the way, I'm sitting here. I'm fucking 50. I am old. Like you're sports old, but you're still very young in life.
Well, I keep telling myself that. But yeah, for our more experienced players, we need those young ones nipping at our heels to make us better players. Just like when I first came in and Katrina Rore was playing, you know, she was the more experienced player and we were battling for that bib. And so she was having to go hard because I was nipping at her heels, whereas I had to go hard because she had the experience over me. So it's an exciting time to know we've got so many young ones coming through, and to have that competition is a good thing. It's hard, but it's really good.
Yeah. And now the Birmingham Commonwealth Games last year, I know you were very excited about this, and then you had like a foot injury, an ankle injury.
First big injury.
How long were you out for?
6 months.
Yeah, so you missed the Commonwealth Games, and the girls won a bronze?
Yes.
Bronze, yeah.
Yeah.
How was that? Take us back to the point of the injury.
I think I have an idea that I'd been playing with it for the domestic season. It just progressively got worse and worse. But, I mean, we were doing the scans and the things. We're doing the necessary things, but nothing was showing up. But I was like, anti-inflammatories, painkillers, good to go.
Check some cortisone in there.
Gosh. It was our very last game. We didn't have a good season that year with the tactics. But our very last game, I remember, was against the Pulse at Christchurch Arena. Went up for an intercept against Tiana, and I landed really hard. And at that point, the painkillers didn't want to work anymore. So I was hobbling. It was only 3 minutes left to go in the game. I'm the kind of player, unless you're going to sub me off, I'm not going off by my own will. So coach wasn't calling it, so I was pretty much just hobbling for the 3 minutes on court. And then they put me, because the selections were coming up for Comm Games and all that kind of stuff, or Comm Games were coming up, they put me in a moon boot, precautionary, while they were doing all the tests and stuff. And I'd gone for my scan. I was in the gym. I was ready to go that morning when I got the news. I went to the gym, still in my moon boot. It was pretty much took it off to go do some lifts. And then I got a message from the physio that said, we got the scans back and it doesn't look promising. He immediately, he was like, it looks like you might have a fracture. My brain refusing to accept it was like, okay, I might be out for a couple of weeks. It's all right. I can do this. It's fine. So I immediately put my boot back on and I ring him and I was like, what does this mean? 2 weeks, 3 weeks, what am I doing? And he was like, no, this doesn't look like this is going to be an operation. And I was like, whoa.
I've been after playing, the Commonwealth Games.
Hold up. I've been playing with painkillers for the last season. I think I can stick it through. It's like, if this is on me, because he was like, it's a fracture. I was like, if it's on me, like if I'm willing to take painkillers, can I just stick it through? Can I just go really hard? And he's like, probably not, because it will eventually snap or whatever. Or like, you know, with Knowles as always, if you're not 100%, you're adding to the load of other players. So I completely understood at that point that I wasn't going
to
be.
Okay, so in other words, it would have been like selfish for you to be playing because you're not playing to your potential.
Yes.
Did you remind them that Richie McCaw won the 2011 World Cup with a broken fucking foot?
Well, the other thing was that, you know, our trainings are really brutal. And so if you are nursing an injury, you can't be in all the trainings, which means you're adding to load with other players. They're having to make up for your load in trainings just so that you can play a game. And that's unfair.
And that's a good way of looking at it. I never thought about framing it that way, but yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. It's almost selfish in a way.
Exactly. So I got that call and he said, well, go to the doctors and just get the confirmation that it is what it is. And I was still saying in the drive over, I was like, nope, they had it wrong. It's not what it is. But unfortunately, the doctor told me, yep, you can see the little line right there. It's like the tiniest little fracture and the tiniest little bone in my foot. And I was like, this is so stupid. But yeah, I went back out after I got the news, got in the car, and I immediately rang mum. And I just bawled my eyes out. I was like, it was the worst. But I gave myself a day or two to sulk about it and cry about it. And I was like, I need to get on with it. It's not the end of the world. Other people have had injuries. It's fine. So I pretty much scheduled my surgery for a couple of weeks after that, went straight into surgery. And I was like, silver lining. At that point, I hadn't seen my family for about 3 or 4 years. So I was like, I'm booking a holiday to go home. So I got to go home and see my family. It was hard. I want to say I supported the girls, which I did in my heart. I did, but it was really hard to watch. So even any comm games. So whenever at home there was any, like, doesn't matter what sport it was, I didn't want to be in the room when it was on the TV. So I would just leave. And my family was massive supporters, so they watched all the games. And they got a bit annoyed at me that I don't want to watch the games with them. But I was like, no, you guys can really watch, but I'm going to go to my room. Like, I can't.
Yeah, just
my heart
too hard.
Was hurting. Yeah. I did end up watching their final game, though, their bronze game. So I mustered up the courage. I was like, no, I need to at least watch this one for them. So, yeah, it was an experience that I know I need to take better care of my body after that. It was 6 months. I had a downtime. I was like, this is a perfect opportunity for me to look at what I need to work on, what I can do better, how to take care of my body better. So I enjoyed my 6 months off. As bad as it was not going to comm games, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot about myself.
Did you? What were the key takeaways, you reckon?
Gosh, I think smarter, not harder. Harder is not always the answer. And I think at that point, I didn't like listening to the doctors and the physios when they told me something, because I was like, no, I can do this. Like, don't tell me.
You're so determined, eh? But you know what? It's a superpower in a way, because it's this dogged determination.
A blessing and a curse.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
I mean, that's where I was like, no, even if it's the smallest niggle, I need to mention it because it can turn into something big. And so need to take better care of my body, need to acknowledge that doctors and physios know more than I do. So if they tell you not to do something, you don't do it. So that was a key learning. And obviously, harder is not always the answer. You can be smarter about it. But then life outside of netball as well. You know, when things are going well, you don't really want to change too much in the routines and the things that you do. But the 6 months that I had, I was like, perfect opportunity to experiment a little bit. So I experimented in my diet and how I did things as well. And I've been lactose free for ages at that point, for a few years. And then I decided to go gluten free as well. I had a grumbly tummy for years and years and I just let it be. And then I went gluten free and it's been amazing. And challenged myself with, no, oh my gosh, and mum eyes will tell you, I'm really, really big sweet tooth. She used to be my roomie and she always tells me I was the worst roomie to be amongst because I was so bad with my treats. But I started challenging myself to stay away from treats as well. So, and the difference, not necessarily that I just saw but felt in my body, was quite interesting. And so I was interested in behind the science of food and why it did the things that it did and what it did. So that's where my interest in nutrition started coming in. So I had a plan of what I wanted to do after netball. So it was a good 6 months. Yeah, a lot of learnings.
I feel like you just have this natural ability. In any situation, there is always a silver lining, isn't there? Or there's an upside. But sometimes it's very difficult to find or see that. Even if you search very, very hard, but it seems like you managed to find that with the Commonwealth Games situation relatively quickly.
That's the best way to get out of your funk, is to try and see the good things in life. Sometimes it's a bit harder. Sometimes you need that support, and you need that somebody to pull you through. But I think you have to look at it like that. Otherwise, you're just going to stay stuck in that mentality of, you know, the world is against me. So, nah.
Well, good for you. And do you have like a sports psychologist or anything in the team? Or?
Yeah, we do have a sports psychologist, Rodney. we can use him. We can utilize him. Again, this is where in the past I was like, oh, I don't need that. You know, it's like, why would I want to do that? I'm happy. I'm good to go. But it's learning skills about yourself and how to be a better athlete is quite good in that perspective. So, yes, we do have somebody to help us to go to, which is quite nice. We're quite fortunate.
I get the feeling you don't have too much to do with Rodney. Did you lean on him during that the Commonwealth Games time? Or
it was quite funny. Really? I was laughing because when I heard the news, this was the Friday, I think I heard the news, and I told myself I'm going to give myself the weekend to sulk. But I got in touch because they were like, we think it's important that you do get in touch with Rod. So I messaged Rod and I was like, Rod, I need to talk to you, but I'm taking this weekend for myself. At that point, I thought he knew, like, you know, because when, like, they've got the structure up there, so they tend to share that, you know, this person's out, whatever. So I thought he knew about my injury. And so the Monday when we scheduled the Skype or the Microsoft or Teams meeting, whatever, he was like, right, Karen, what's going on? And he hadn't heard about my injury. So he thought I was going through like this massive life crisis and I was like depressed and like going through this massive ordeal. And he was like ready. He's like, I had my books ready. I had my questions ready. I was like, Rod, I'm just injured. I'm just not going to Comm Games. And he's like, oh, okay. I thought you were going through it. And I was like, no. It's just, you know, I'm having to deal with this now. And I've never dealt with this before. I don't know.
You shouldn't be downplaying this, though. This is a big piece of adversity you went through.
Yeah. I think that's a good and a bad thing about me, is that whether I had success or a tough time, I don't necessarily acknowledge it for what it is. I'm not great with the touchy-feely kind of stuff. And I think that's why also Rod knows this. That's why I also avoid him, because I don't like getting into that touchy-feely stuff. And I hate crying in front of people, even though like I can cry easily if I am emotional. I hate crying in front of people.
Do you? Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's a vulnerable thing or.
I used to have massive, massive walls up, and I've been trying to get better the last few years to sort of like tear them down a little bit, because I know like vulnerability is like another sort of superpower. Are you, I get the feeling you've got walls up. Do you? Or is that unfair?
That's probably fair. I think my circle is quite small. And like I mentioned with my time, who I give my time to is limited.
You got shit to do.
I do. Yeah. I do. but also, I do. Like, I trust people until you give me reason not to. But when it comes to my personal tight-knit thing, I don't have many people that I have that close to me. Yeah, I guess I do have walls, but once you're in, you're in.
You're in that inner circle. Geez, I feel like it's a long way burrowing to get into that inner circle, though, isn't it? Seems like you've mentioned your family a few times, like you're really close to them. So I'm guessing they're in your inner circle. But I mean, your technology's good with Teams and Zoom and FaceTime and whatever, but it's they're still a long way away.
Yeah, and I think recently in the last few years, it's gotten more real about not having that support system, immediate support system around me. But I try not, like, I don't want that to be the reason for me to suddenly start looking for, you know, a significant other or trying to, I think I was quite social. I tried to be quite social at the start or earlier in this year, and it drained me so much because I was like, I need more people around me. I need to build my, you know, my circle. But it drained me so much, and it actually was to my detriment. And I was like, I don't need this. I am happy with myself. But it does get lonely. It really does get lonely sometimes. But it's not forever. And I know I've got the right people around me when I need them. Yeah.
How's your mental health been over the years? Has it been pretty good?
Yeah.
Mostly good?
Well, yes. Again, like, I try.
You're not just sweeping everything under the rug?
Rod might tell you I do sometimes.
Rod wouldn't know. You've only had 2 meetings with him in 5 years.
Avoidance. No. Avoidance. It's key. No.
No, you seem pretty good. Like, this is the first time we've met, and we've been chatting for like an hour, 20 now, and you just, I get the definite impression of someone that's just relentlessly optimistic and positive and glass half full.
I think I'm fortunate to have the ability to, most of the time, 90% of the time, when something's happened to me that I don't like or it's a bad, if I can't do anything about it, I just switch off from it. I was like, I can't do anything about it. There's no point of stressing about it. So I'm fortunate enough to have that ability to just switch it off and be like, no, I'm not going to worry myself about that. And so that keeps me in a good, positive mindset. But it's not always like that. It definitely isn't.
Yeah, that's a good way to approach things, though, because, you know, everyone will tell you, don't worry about the things that are out of your control. But it's easier said than done, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. And I think I'm sometimes guilty of that because I've got like a sister that is very much a worrywart. Like, she takes on the world's problems. And so she's just like this massive mother at heart. And so she is very big on worrying and like caring for others. And so my advice to her would always be like, why? Like, why are you doing this? Like, but that's her personality and that is who she is. So it's so much harder for someone like that to just be able to switch off. So that's why I said at the start, I'm fortunate to have that ability to be able to do that. But it can be at a detriment to myself sometimes as well, because sometimes you do need to feel those things and you do need to work through them and not pile them up. So, yeah, working on that aspect of it.
I feel like you're always going to have something that you're working on.
Yeah. It's that constant improvement, trying to be a better person every day. You have to. Yeah.
Oh, it's inspiring. Oh. It's inspiring. And what's your inner voice like? Are you mostly kind to yourself? Because I know if you're I don't know. I've probably over the years had sort of like a perfectionism complex. It can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing as well.
Yeah.
Are you mostly kind to yourself, or you quite hard on yourself?
I think probably more leaning towards being hard on myself, but I think that is expected of a person, like high-performing athletes. That's the mentality that we have as well, that doesn't matter how good you are, you can always be better. That's where I have to say in the last couple of years, specifically my sister, but also my mum, have come into play really well in reminding me that what I have done and how far I have come and how good I am, because I'm always downplaying things that I do. I started this, Jay Galdard, he started this e tū tangata concept about tall poppy syndrome, and that we're too humble sometimes. And I come from a history of, I hate cockiness and arrogance. I cannot stand it. But it's that fine line of acknowledging when you are doing well and being proud of yourself and celebrating that. And so that's what I'm trying to work on myself a little bit more, is celebrating myself and being proud of myself a little bit more, rather than always like downplaying or being harsh on myself. And my sister's been really good, that voice in the background for me, because I know they'll be very open and honest with me when I'm not doing something well or when I need to be better. So coming from them, that support, and be like, no, you are doing really well. Don't be so down on yourself is quite good.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between being proud of yourself and being able to acknowledge what you've done and thinking that your shit doesn't stink. You know what I mean? Is Tulu Poppy a big thing in South Africa as well? It's a massive thing here in New Zealand.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Well, not that I would say it is. Mm. No. I think that it's pretty much a thing here, but I love that about New Zealand as well. I love the humble side. It's just having that fine line of being humble, but celebrating the good things as well. And I think that's where I would like to see it go, is that we do celebrate, and not just ourselves, but each other. And I think that's more important, because if you get that celebration from others, you're more inclined to do it for yourself too.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that person and be like, oh, I'm so good, or I'm doing this. But when the people around you are doing it for you, you'll be like, yeah, maybe I am doing well.
Well, you are. And I feel like today of all days is a time where you should pause and reflect on what you've done. I mean, you just finished the series against Australia. You've played 50 games for New Zealand. And the road that you took to get here, it's incredible. It's a hell of a journey.
You do
deserve to pat yourself on the back.
Yeah, we had Wendy Frew, who is an amazing player down in the South Island, Southland. She got 15 minutes out on court in the black dress, and she came into our camp before our Invercargill game, because we're trying to connect with our past players, and she had a chat about how she wished it could have been more and how she relished the few minutes that she had out on court. And so when you hear something like that, it just reminds you that, you know, it's every second out there, every moment in that black dress is an absolute privilege and an honour, and you need to relish that moment for as long as you can, because you don't know how long it's going to last. So I think after having that chat with her and now being able to celebrate my 50 games, yeah, it's hard when it's about me. When I'm celebrating other people's 50th, I was like, this is amazing, you've played so many games. But when it's about me, it's like, gosh, you just can't believe it, almost. Mm. So it's hard to celebrate.
Oh, that's really cool. And I've heard you reference the black dress a few times, sort of the same way that the All Blacks mention the black jersey. Mm. Do you get like a new black dress each game?
We get a new one every year. So our year runs August till September. So you pretty much get a new allocation whenever you get selected in the squad. You get your two dresses.
Two dresses a year?
Two dresses a year.
Oh, so you don't get one.
We wash it every night, and we don't put it in the washing machine either. No, you hand wash it in your bathroom, and then you wring it dry, and then you,
Out of necessity, because you have to.
We've only got two dresses.
Right.
So if it goes out in the wash and it doesn't come back, or the washing machine does something to it, you know, whatever.
If it goes missing, you're screwed.
Yeah, yeah. So, we have to take very good care of our two dresses.
Because the All Blacks get like they get a jersey presented before each game, and it's got like black embroidery with them, who they're playing and the date and stuff. Really? So from your 5 years, you've got like 10 dresses.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, or, well, actually, correction, for pinnacle events, there'll be a separate dress for a pinnacle event. So for Comm Games, you would have had your allocation for the year, but Comm Games had its specific dress and World Cup had its specific dress. So every now and then you get four dresses a year. But, I mean, it just makes that dress for me, not that obviously the All Blacks jersey won't be more special, but it makes that physical dress so much more special, because I know all my games, all my blood, sweat and tears was in that specific dress. So handing what I do with that dress means so much more to me.
That's cool. What do you think you'll do with them at the end of your career? You seem so humble. I can't imagine you ever framing them and having them in a...
Well, so I've held on to one dress and then one... if I had someone really special to me that year that meant a lot for me, I would give that dress to that special person. So I've held on to at least one of each allocation. Same with my franchise dresses. I've got so many of them as well. And we, after our last World Cup, Gina Crampton and Tobias Selby-Rickett, they had a contact in the South Island. They had this massive frame and they framed their dresses and with big collage of photos of themselves playing and the medal. It looks amazing. Mm. And as amazing as it looks, I was like, what am I going to do with this? Like, I don't want to put it up in my house. Like, but then I thought about it. Okay.
It's cool though.
I know. So I've thought about it. And I think one day when I have my own big house, I want my own little gym set up, my room with my gym set up, and I will frame... I don't know if I can frame all of them because there'll be too many of them, but I'll frame my key ones and I'll try and put them up, and that will be my memorabilia gym/gym workout room. So hopefully that's the plan one day.
Yeah,
with them.
I like it. Oh, that's a good plan. And you turned 30 in April this year, which is a big milestone birthday. How did that make you feel? Because it's as we touched upon before, on the big scheme of life, you're still very, very young.
Yeah, I don't necessarily feel 30. Mm. Sometimes I'm like, oh gosh, I can't believe I am. But I just try and remind myself, like, I've got so many more years ahead of me. And just because I'm 30, like, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? And I'll tell you something. From the perspective of being 50 now, I still feel young in my mind. Like you still feel young in your mind. Your mind doesn't really sort of age necessarily. Yeah. Like you evolve and you change, of course, but your mind doesn't really change.
And I feel like if you put that out there, like that aura of like I'm young and I'm still like, you know, people, like a lot of people don't believe I'm 30 until I tell them I'm 30. So again, it's as you're as old as you feel. And why does age matter anyway? You know, it's what you do with it.
Yeah, but I suppose from a high performance sporting perspective, you must be aware that you're probably closer to the end than the start.
Yes, which is like sad.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, because I'm like, I know I've been in it for like 5 years, but I also feel like I just started the other day and I know how quickly time goes by. So body-wise, I feel like I want to push for another World Cup, which is 4 years away. I wouldn't want to finish, but depending on how the body, and I would want to go out on my own terms as well. So definitely aiming for another 4 years and knowing how quickly time goes by, I want to try and enjoy it as much as I can. But hopefully the body can hold out longer. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, would that be the dream? 4 more years and then finish on your own terms at 34, chapter closed.
Well, it depends on what goes on in my life outside, you know. We've got like a few mums in the team who'd probably have a different perspective of what netball looks like for them. And then you get young ones who've got no idea, you know, very much starting their journey. So I think for me, I've made netball my priority for so long. I know I need to start focusing on life outside of netball a little bit more. And so I can't make those calls just yet. At the moment, in terms of performance, I want to push for another 4 years. You never know. I might get to 34, still be single, still only have netball. So I might want to push for longer. Or at that point, I might have a partner. I might want to settle down. So you never know.
Yeah, do you want to find a partner or do you think you're quite happy on your own? I feel like society puts a lot of pressure on people, especially when you get to a certain age, that you should have a partner. Yeah. You did mention before, just in passing, that you're lonely sometimes.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong, I don't think, with being alone, but being lonely is not great.
It's not very often that I do feel lonely. I think the only times I do would probably be when you want that person or that, like that hug or that person to go to, or just that comfort that you don't necessarily have because I don't have my immediate family around me. Or, you know, when you go to events, you don't have that plus one to go with. So there's very few times that I do feel lonely. And so I'm not willing to offer up I'm wanting the right person in the right time. I'm not willing to offer up my time and unnecessary effort for those few moments that I feel lonely.
If you go out with someone, how long do you give it before you know, like, before you know if there's a spark there or not?
I'm a feeling person. Obviously, I have to be attracted to some degree to that person, but I'm very much a feeling person. And I can probably tell within the first few dates whether I can see it going anywhere. But I always try and give things the benefit of the doubt, and I try and, you know, see where it goes. I think feeling-wise, because I'm a feeling person, quite quickly.
First few dates, that's quite generous. I expected you to say, like, first few minutes almost.
Well,
like,
yeah.
It
well,
seems I like think... you're a lady that doesn't want to waste a minute of time that you got
here. But I'm also, like, that benefit of the doubt kind of thing. Like, the person I am when you first meet me might not necessarily be the true me because, you know, you might be nervous or there's something going on or whatever. So do try and give it actually that time and effort, because you don't want to be like, nah, and
dismiss it too
miss
quickly.
Something. Yeah. So I'm also like, give it the time that it needs.
Yeah. And just like Dame Nolan gave you the time you need after your first test.
Exactly.
Bad first impression, but you came good.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I mean, who knows? I know nothing about, like, you know, love and that kind of stuff. I'm like, some people say it's love at first sight. Others say it's something you develop and you build into. I'm like, who knows? I think everybody's different. So I'm just winging it.
Yeah. Are you religious?
I am, yes. I grew up Christian, so got those values behind me as well. But yeah, and I think that's also shaped me into the person I am as well, the way I think and the way I do things as well. But I know there's a wide world out there, and I definitely don't judge. I'm not, you know, you do you, I'll do me, happy with that kind of thing, you know. So as long as I get along with you and I, you know, connect with you, that's what's important to me when I'm like, build friendships or relationships. So, but yeah, very big growing up. That was a big aspect of my life and shaped me in my values and morals and how I think about things.
Yeah. And now you live in a city called Christchurch.
Yeah.
I had to think of a more religious sounding place. Yeah. Oh, it's cool. Oh, no, I wondered, because I've read a few interviews with you and you use some phrases like blessed quite a bit and you talk about your creator and stuff. So I thought, and you just seem like a good person as well. So I thought maybe there's some religious backing there.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, also acknowledging, you know, there's a lot of other people that aren't necessarily. And I think when you are like, yes, I'm religious, people can be like, oh, like, are you judgy or that kind of stuff.
Don't try and ram it down my throat.
Yeah. So yeah. I think I'm very big on that. Like, that's not my role to do at all.
It's fine for you.
Yeah.
Could you date someone shorter than you? I'm asking for a couple of friends who may not be as what's your height? You're quite tall, eh?
In centimetres, 184.
Right.
Yeah. So, I went on a few dates with a guy that was shorter than me, and beautiful guy, like, gentleman, absolutely green flags, like, lovely. And we still joke about it because we're still in touch. Like, just because it didn't work out doesn't mean, like, I still enjoy his company.
Mates.
Yeah. And we still joke about it, but I'm like, it's nothing to do with the person. And I think that's sometimes hard to explain to them. I'm tall, so I come across big, and I like feeling small, and I would like to feel small. So it's probably more so a personal issue I'm dealing with, that I probably want my partner to be taller than me. Yes.
Are you quite self-conscious of your height?
No, I'm not. Used to be at school. I hated it. I also used to slouch. I never wore heels. Oh my gosh, I, like, my wardrobe's full of heels now. I don't care. I wear heels ever. Like, platforms, I'm always wearing platform shoes. No, not anymore. I love my height now. I absolutely enjoy it. A lot harder finding a guy that's taller than me, though, especially when I love wearing heels. But again, it's, I know if the right person comes along and I have that feeling towards them and they happen to be shorter than me, I'll do across that bridge when we get there.
You need to start hanging out at Breakers training camp.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I know everyone's always like, you need to find yourself an athlete. And I was like, well, yes and no. Yeah, I'm sure there's tall people that's not athletes.
Yeah. Hey, well, I'm really excited to see what the future brings for you. And I'm really excited to hear that your goal is to keep playing for as long as your body allows, because you've got so much to give. And I can't thank you enough for coming over today, the morning after your 50th game for the Silver Ferns. It's been great to finally meet you.
Oh, gosh. Back to normal life, you know. Thank you so much for having me. I always love having a bit of a chat. And because when you have these kind of discussions with people, sometimes you realize or notice things about yourself you didn't before, because people tend to ask you questions you might not have thought about or have voiced out in the open. So I love having these chats. You learn so much about yourself.
Yeah.
As well.
Has there been anything that you can think of from this chat, or is it sort of like on the flight home later today that you're...
Probably on the flight home. Yeah. I'll be rethinking about what I said. It's like, did I ever make myself look really stupid?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Look, in these conversations, if anyone's going to make themselves look stupid, it's likely to be me.
Oh, gosh.
I always go into these chats assuming I'm the dumbest person in the room, and it's I think it's a good way to go about it. Karen Berger, you are a great New Zealander.
Oh, thank you.
Can we call you a New Zealander?
Like 12 years, you know, I've pretty much, that's why I'm always saying I'm going home. Wherever I'm going home. So I'm fortunate and blessed to have so many homes. So I definitely call New Zealand home as well. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Hey, best of luck for the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Karen Berger on the Dom Harvey podcast, brought to you by Radix Nutrition. Thank you very much for sticking around and listening all the way through. Any feedback, you can reach me anytime, domharveynz@gmail.com or on Instagram, domharveynz. I always love it. Look, I can't get back to everyone that reaches out to me, but I always love reading your correspondence, your feedback, your suggestions, your tips, whatever. And I do read each and every piece, and it means the world to me, so thank you very much. Thanks again to the legends at Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. Their backing this year has given me the opportunity to grow the podcast in ways that would have been impossible otherwise, and I have absolutely no trouble raving about them because their products are world-class. Check them out at radixnutrition.co.nz. radixnutrition.co.nz, and Radix, spelled R-A-D-I-X. Once you give their products a go once, I would be very surprised if you don't go on to become a regular customer. All right. Thanks once again. Really appreciate you guys. And I do hope to see you again next time on the Dom Harvey podcast. See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.